Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage and a zone they didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
You want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2006 NFL season.
Zach Guts Combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Let's go, let's go.
Just about here, kids. Playoff time, Patriots and Chargers, Sunday afternoon. It's a 4:30 Eastern time kickoff. Welcome inside the playbook yet again here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. You know what? I think it's great if you've actually written in to complain about me complaining about the Patriots not being able to tackle. That's fine. Let the PFW guys know that. Now, can you do me the favor of letting me know that? That's what we want to get into here today. Normally on Thursdays, what we do during the course of the regular season, the entire season, we ask you to send in your predictions of the game. How you see the game unfolding. Why you see the game unfolding the way that you do. Who's going to win? So if you have not yet sent in your prediction for Sunday, now's the time to do so. And that's Patriots fans, Charger fans who are listening in. That is everyone who's listening in right now. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. You may also phone at 508-543-7482. Once again, 508-543-7482. Hank Bauer, who is the former Charger great and now the radio analyst for the Chargers Radio Network, will join us coming up in just a few moments. We will have in the second hour of our program Russell Baxter, as he normally does, the NFL research coordinator for ESPN, will break down the semifinal matchups in the respective conferences. And then, of course, we also have Tom Brady and we have Bill Belichick a little bit later on in the program. All right. We got him? Not yet.
In 10 minutes.
In 10 minutes we'll have him. Thank you. All right. That's what I wanted to find out. All right. So Hank Bauer will join us in approximately 10 minutes here on the program, and we'll get into some of that. In the meantime, what I want you to do now, honestly, all right, it sounds to me based on, and maybe it was just a couple emailers, I don't know, because I've been out most of the day so far today, so I didn't really have a chance to listen in to PFW in progress today on my way into the studio here at the stadium. But if you've got a problem with the way that I've sort of broken it down over the last couple of days, if you disagree with how I have basically tried to lay this out for you, then great. Tell me why you disagree with me. That's what this is all about. I'm not going to snap you off. I'm going to basically, you know, I'll say, well, this is why I disagree with your assessment. I have made this statement since day one. This isn't something that has just happened in the last week or even 2 weeks, but since probably I'd say since mid-season, maybe even goes back earlier than that. Patriots are not a good tackling football team. And you notice when I mentioned this to our PFW brethren in here just a few moments ago, nobody disagreed. In fact, yesterday, Paul Perillo agreed with me. He doesn't think the Patriots are a very good tackling football team either. The Patriots are a good football team overall. Okay? You can't not be a good football team and get to this point in the season. They have certainly been one of the preeminent franchises in the entire NFL over the last 5 years. There's no arguing that point. But when you get to a point in the season where you've got nothing but the creme de la creme left on your schedule, as they have with the San Diego Chargers on Sunday, then you must play flawless football if you expect to advance. It is all about surviving and advancing when you get into a tournament format, and that is what it is, even though nobody calls it a tournament. It is a tournament. Now, unless you can force the other guy into more mistakes than you make, you need to plan on playing flawlessly. Now, the Patriots have done a good job of limiting turnovers. They've done a reasonably good job of limiting penalties and the mental mistakes that we were all griping and moaning about midway through this season. But what they have not done, and what the constant factor has been with this team over the last 8 to 10 weeks at least, and that's a minimum here, they have not tackled well. They have allowed receivers and running backs to make big plays. Do we need to go back again to Jericho Cotchery last week? Do we need to go back 2 weeks before that to Maurice Jones-Drew? Do we need to go back further than that here, kids? That should be enough to convince you that there is a little bit of a concern there. And you should also share that concern. Now, maybe you don't think that'll be a big deal. But I think if there's one person in the NFL who can make you miss and make you look bad while you're missing, it's LaDainian Tomlinson. That's what concerns me more than anything right now. Now, I also said earlier this week that I feel like that the Patriots will certainly try to hem him in and not let him get the corners. And I also feel like the Patriots will probably do whatever they can to make Phillip Rivers beat them, because I don't think they think that Phillip Rivers can beat him. I don't think that's at all. They're gonna throw him, though, some different looks. They're not gonna allow him carte blanche here. In other words, allow LaDainian to get his yards and then, you know, concentrate on shutting down Phillip Rivers. See, I think if you allow LaDainian, you know, a typical LaDainian Tomlinson game, that's when he goes for, you know, a buck and a half on you and scores three touchdowns and you end up losing, you know, 38-24, something along those lines. I don't think the Chargers defense is going to completely shut down the Patriots. Although I think the Patriots, even though they played exceedingly well in the red zone on defense this year, and this is going to be the real battle. And even Marty Schottenheimer, the old Boston Patriot linebacker himself from back in 1969-70. How many of you remember that? We hadn't actually brought that up this week, but Marty Schottenheimer actually was a Patriots linebacker for the old Boston Patriots in the late 60s, before the AFL-NFL merger, or actually right about that time. The big matchup here is the red zone offense for the Chargers against the red zone defense for the Pats. The Chargers have been practically unstoppable in the red zone on offense, whereas the Patriots have done a great job when teams get inside the 20-yard line of holding opponents to just 3 points or less. That's going to be where this game is going to be won or lost. And I think that the Chargers will be able to have their way, but I think the Patriots will probably win a couple of those battles. Conversely, I think the Patriots will be able to score on the Chargers. I think the key here is whether or not the Patriots can get, A, off to a quick start and force San Diego to play from behind and get out of a comfort zone. In other words, have to go to the pass a little bit more and allow Phillip Rivers the opportunity to beat them. See, I think if the Patriots jump on the Chargers early, that Phillip Rivers thinks a little bit more often about going to the air, which plays into the Patriots' game plan. So this is all going to be predicated, in my opinion, on the Patriots jumping out quick, like they did against the Jets this last week. If the Patriots don't get out early, if the Chargers score early, get out to a 7-0 or a 10-0 or even 14-0 lead somewhere in that vicinity, then they can go LT. Then they can go Michael Turner. Then they can hit Antonio Gates. They don't have to go deep. They don't have to look for the big play. And they can ball control, and they can clock, and then they can hopefully, you know, and this is where the Patriots, unfortunately, their lack of tackling prowess is going to come into play as well. Can you envision, say, a 14-3 San Diego lead midway through the second quarter? They have the football in about the Patriots' 47-yard line, and LT gets around the end, and Asante Samuel misses a tackle. Teddy Bruschi misses a tackle, and he goes up the sideline for 48 yards and scores and makes it 21-3 at halftime. And then you're coasting easy. Now you're going to play right into the hands of the Chargers, who are going to do nothing but pin back their ears and come after Tom Brady and make, you know, the rest of the game miserable for him. That's what you don't want. You can reverse that scenario, though, if you can ball control. And I don't think the Patriots are necessarily going to try to pound it between the tackles here. I really expect them to come shotgun, 4 and 5 wide, no huddle, short passing game, dink and dunk, not allow San Diego to substitute. And like I said, I said this yesterday, I'd be shocked if the Pats do not have somewhere around a 20 game or so package for no huddle against the Charger defense, just to allow them to be back on their heels a little bit and not allow them to attack. You want them to react. Conversely, the Patriots must be proactive on offense. If you allow San Diego to be proactive, that's where Sean Merriman can wreak havoc. That's where Jamal Williams can wreak havoc. And a relatively healthy Luis Castillo can wreak havoc. I think the Patriots will be able to move the football in the San Diego secondary. I think both secondaries are relatively even. I don't think one really stands out over the other. So I think the Patriots will have an opportunity to pop one and go deep if Jabari Gaffney won't drop it. It's probably a little unfair, but, hey, that's what he's done over the last couple of weeks. And he actually had a great week last week overall. So, honestly, you know, what I think both teams are going to end up moving the football. Both teams are going to end up scoring. Both teams are going to get stopped. I think it really boils down to fundamental play, as most big games do. And I've made mention of this many, many times, and I will continue to make mention of this many, many times. Big games boil down to the basics of football. Turnovers, field position, kicking game, fundamentals. Fundamentals. And I'm going to give a slight edge to San Diego in that regard right now. And so my score prediction right now is San Diego 34, New England 31. I did mention that, I think, or alluded to that a couple of moments ago, so there you go. That's what I think. 2 days ago, I was ready to say about 35 to 28. So the Patriots have closed the gap a little bit. 34-31 is what I think. I certainly, as a fan, I hope I'm wrong, because I would very much like to be back here with you next week, because obviously once the season is over, we go into off-season programming mode here on Patriots.com radio, and that's once a week on Wednesdays at noontime with the PFW boys, and then we wait for Patriots playbook to come back next football season. So I certainly hope that we have an AFC championship game to talk about and preview next week, and that means we'd be back together again next Tuesday. I would like nothing more than that, and I would like nothing more than to just get the veritable avalanche of emails saying, ha ha, you're wrong. You were wrong. The Patriots won, and here we are. That's great. I would love that. I would welcome that. But again, just this is what how I kind of look at it. This is how I break it down. This is where I personally believe right now the difference between the two teams lie. And it's close. I really believe it to be close. I don't think either team is going to mop the floor of the other. Of course, then again, if we find the Patriots with three or four turnovers, then San Diego will mop the floor. Conversely, if the Chargers turn the ball over three or four times and the Patriots do not, the Patriots will get out to a lead. I'm not willing to say the Patriots will mop the floor with the Chargers, though, because anytime you're playing on the road, the home team, you know, usually has the benefit of the doubt in terms of being able to come back. And I think the Chargers have done a pretty good job of that. They've dictated that they can score in the fourth quarter, the highest scoring team in the NFL in the fourth quarter this year, 176 points. And Coach Belichick pointed that out yesterday, and it is extraordinary. It is extraordinary. Patriots scored, conversely, 110 points in the fourth quarter, which is not bad. That's a good number. In fact, that's even a great number. That was eighth best in the NFL this year. 176, though, by the Chargers. Tells me those guys know what to do when the game is on the line. So that's why they turn the ball over two or three times. Maybe the Patriots get a couple of picks. Maybe even they get a couple of defensive scores. But if the Patriots have a 10 to a 14-point lead going into the fourth quarter, the game ain't over, folks. It's not over. This is going to be one where you're going to sit on the edge of your seat until the final gun goes off. It'll be a nail-biter. Even with the Patriots in a lead, you know, by two possessions or more, it's going to be a nail-biter. So get used to that fact right now. You should already be getting the clammy, sweaty palms right now, because that's the kind of game it's going to be. It's going to be great for football fans overall. If you don't have an allegiance to either side, you are going to enjoy this weekend, and you're going to particularly enjoy the last game, because I do believe the best game will be saved for last. Patriots and the Chargers with the 4:30 Sunday kickoff. Best will be for last. That's I believe that, and I will stick with my original prediction that the survivor of this game will end up in the Super Bowl, will end up representing the AFC, and could easily be the Super Bowl champ again. So I think that's the kind of thing that you got riding on this particular ballgame Sunday. All right, so it's time for you now to let me know how you feel. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. If it's busy, well, then just wait a couple of minutes and call back in. because it's just one line coming in here to the studio. But certainly you can send via email, and I hope that you will do so. Predict the final score of the game, and we'll get to some of your emails coming up on the program. And also, I'm interested to know how you think the game is going to break down. Not only predict the score, if you think the Patriots will win, well, tell me where you think the difference in the matchup will lie. Conversely, if you're a Chargers fan, and we've heard from several of you this week, which is fine, you are certainly welcome. Love to go back and forth with you. Tell me why you think the Chargers will end up winning the football game, and where you think the difference in the game will be. Maybe we should point that question to this gentleman. Hank Bauer, former Charger, and now a member of the Chargers radio crew as their analyst, joins us here inside Patriots Playbook. Hank, it's great to talk with you again. Thank you so much for spending a couple of minutes with us.
John, God bless Mosi Tatupu and all the great Patriots.
Thank you very much. I guess that goes for Marty Schottenheimer too then, huh?
Yeah, I think Marty gets a bad rap, don't you?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think we forget that, you know, at one point in time he did wear the Pat Patriot on the side of his helmet a long, long time ago. So.
Oh, yeah, a long time ago. But how about Marty? You know, only two coaches, and we all know about Belichick's record, mm-hmm. and his amazing record in the playoffs, but how about Marty Schottenheimer, 20 years in the league, 15 winning seasons, 13 times to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Only two coaches have gone more, Tom Landry and Don Shula,
mm-hmm.
and over 200 regular season wins. And yet there are people out there that doubt his coaching abilities.
Yep.
Just because of the playoff record. And I think that the one thing that really drives me nuts in terms of the Hall of Fame and how people are perceived, John, is, you know, it's all, and I guess there's something to it, but it almost seems like you got to win a Super Bowl to be validated, either as a quarterback or a player or certainly as a coach. And I go back to the guy that I played under and coached with, Don Coryell. Why in the heck is he not in the Hall of Fame?
I can only surmise it's because he didn't win the ultimate game.
There you go.
Right.
You can't tell me there was a better offensive lineman than Ed White. You know, you go talk to Fred Smirlis and ask Freddie what he thinks of Ed White.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 16 years in the league, four times to the Super Bowl with the Minnesota Vikings, started at every position, with the exception of center, but he played all of them well. Played in, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 Pro Bowls, and Ed White's not even mentioned for the Pro Bowl because you know why? Because the Chargers never won the big one. You know. And who knows? Maybe this is the year. Who knows?
Well, I personally, and Hank, I've said this all week, I think the winner of this game goes on and wins it all.
John, I totally agree with you, bud. I totally agree, because I think that certainly there is a way. I think that you got to get there's a blueprint to get to the playoffs, and then I think it all changes. And I think that Coach Belichick, hate to call him like Belichick.
Yeah, it's
Coach
sir, right.
Because I got such great respect for the guy. I don't even know the guy. Mm-hmm. Never really met the guy. I coached in this league for 4 years, too, after I played. And,
right.
And coached along with Ernie Zampezi and Al Saunders, all these guys. And, you know, I got great respect for the guy just based on what he's been able to do and the great career he's had. But he's got the blueprint to get through the playoffs. I mean, it hasn't been like the Patriots have blown people out. I mean, you know, there's a reason the Patriots have won. It starts with good players, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Always, first and foremost. But it also starts with to me, you know, coaching, making adjustments, and paying attention to the details. The little things that make a difference. When it comes down to two teams that are pretty evenly matched, which all these teams are ability-wise in the playoffs, it's being able to make adjustments on the run, coaching-wise, to adjust your game plan on the fly,
mm-hmm.
and then do the little things that make the difference. And his teams have done it. And really, that was the difference that kept, you know, the great Air Coryell teams that I played with and played alongside. I was a team captain of. You know, we had four straight playoff years,
mm-hmm.
and two championship games, and we lost, you know, we eventually lost, you know, each year, and there's a reason for that. We turn the ball over.
Right. You got to do the little things to win, and all things being equal, both of these teams have put themselves in the position because they've done all of the little things. Which is why the little things are going to be so more magnified this Sunday. I mean,
no question.
Team that leaves the ball on the ground or puts it away in the air is really going to put themselves in a hole.
And you look at the more I study these two teams, it is eerie how similar they are. You know, Cam Cameron, very unpredictable on offense. Very.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you seen the gadget plays that this team has run over the course of the season?
Some
probably
of them.
Not, but let me tell you, Coach Belichick and his guys have.
We've had a few of them, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you guys have done that, and then the way that Coach Belichick and his guys, you know, just changed the tempo, changed the looks, changed the personnel, changed the formations, just try to keep you off balance offensively, and the Chargers do the same thing now, and you look at the strengths, you look at both quarterbacks, young quarterbacks certainly. Rivers doesn't have the history of Brady, but Rivers is right there with what Tom Brady did his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's scary how similar they are. And you look at how teams have been successful against them. Well, you know, when Brady's been pressured and Brady's been knocked around, you know, he's struggled. That's the only time he struggles. Same thing with Phillip. So I think on offense, both teams have great running backs, excellent tight ends. Very productive, maybe underappreciated offensive lines, innovative coaching, receiving cores that are, you know, not, I would say not upper tier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Yep, I would.
Then you look at the defenses, and it starts, they're both 34 defenses, although the Patriots play it differently. Unbelievable front three, tough, experienced linebackers. And I think if any, you know, good cover corners, both teams, and then safeties who at times have had problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the edge, if there is to give the Chargers one, is in the kicking game.
Yeah.
You're on your third punter. I haven't done my homework on that. Why do you have two punters on injured reserve?
Well, that's a very good question. And if we had an honest answer, I might be able to give you an honest answer, but nobody really knows other than the fact that we have a foot injury and a knee injury to the previous two punters. And so that's why Todd Sauerbrunn's in there now. So.
Well, chew on this stat, John. Mike Seifers, who I wouldn't trade for any punter in this league,
mm-hmm.
has had 32 inside the 20, might be 39. And only two touchbacks.
That's great. That's an unbelievable number.
And of 69 punts, he's only had, like, I don't know, 29 returned?
Wow.
I mean, the guy has a strong leg, but he is a punter. You know, he controls field position. He can hit every ball. And I'm not so sure Todd Sauerbrunn can do that. And then you go to the kicker. Now, I know what the young kid Goskowski
yep.
did last week.
Mm-hmm.
3 for 3, but Nate Kading made the Pro Bowl for a reason.
Sure.
And he has 11 touchbacks. And
sure.
I don't think that the rookie has figured that part of the game out yet.
Yeah, I think that we would all agree that, you know, that has to be an edge right now for the Chargers. The only thing that would negate that is if we didn't have Gostkowski, we still had Vinatieri, but that's not the case. So.
yeah, and if I had hair, I'd probably be Tom Cruise. But that ain't the case either, dude.
That's right.
You know, we got the Pro Bowl special teams player against the old Pro Bowl special teams player, Izzo against Osgood.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shapes up to be a great matchup.
Where then, again, Hank Bauer with us here on Patriots Playbook, where then do you see this game actually kind of playing itself down a little bit? You need to take that call?
No, I'm not taking that call.
Oh, okay.
Heck no.
That's nice. I like that, though. It's a
heck
good ring.
Heck no. You, John, you guys, the Patriots fans out there, they take precedent. They have earned that respect from me.
Thank you. Well, it's kind of unusual you bring that up only because the Patriots, as I'm sure you very well are aware, Hank, do everything within their power to try to create the us versus them, us against the world scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Sean Merriman fed into that just a little bit when he was interviewed at halftime of the Pats-Jets game, as I'm sure you know last week. So because of that, that's just sort of been one of those slow building, slow burning things from the East Coast.
Come on. Do you know how much of that makes a difference when the whistle blows?
Very little.
Thank you.
But it does.
If you're thinking, if you need something like that to motivate you as a player, you're in the wrong profession.
I totally agree with it.
When it comes to this stage, you know, and that's all good for the fans and the media and all that other stuff. But as a player, that stuff shouldn't motivate you, and it shouldn't. All it can do is affect you negatively, I think.
Well, these guys down the hallway have figured out a way to use that to their advantage, whatever it means. And so if it gets them in the us against the world, feeling, then,
that's
you know, most of us kind of think like it's got to be much ado about nothing, especially when you get hit upside the head, you know, on the first snap of the ball game.
Dude, listen, I covered thousands of kicks in this game.
Right.
Okay? I scored 21 touchdowns. I know once the whistle blows, John, forget about it. You don't think about that stuff. The game is too complex. It's too fast. And there's too much at stake to be worrying about. Oh my God! Do you believe what Sean Merriman said last week?
Uh-huh.
Come on!
Yeah.
I mean, that's pregame hype. It may, and you know, guys don't need to get motivated for this game. I think that's all a bunch of bunk.
Well, you shouldn't have to get motivated, especially when you realize that, you know. And I think both teams have a certain amount of respect for the other.
Absolutely.
The Chargers earned it because they had the best record overall in the NFL this year, and I think the Patriots certainly have earned it over the course of the last several years. So anybody that's going to, you know, flap off at the gums right now is doing it to put the spotlight on him, and that's
right.
Probably not a smart thing to do.
No, you're exactly right. So, you know, and I don't, our guys, one thing about our guys, they're not, you know, we there may be some talkers in the line of scrimmage, always will be, but our guys are real respectful of the game. I mean, nobody better than LaDainian Tomlinson in terms of not showing up your opponent.
Right.
What was the point?
I agree with that. He is, and I mentioned this, I think, earlier in the week, Hank, but he is a likable person, and it's very hard to root against a guy like LaDainian Tomlinson because he carries himself so well. He is a wonderful example, at least based on everything that we've read and heard and had a chance to listen to, and I followed his career at TCU, so I think that he does it the right way, and you wish almost everybody could do it the way that he does it.
Absolutely. And you know what's funny is, I've been so blessed to watch every one of his carries, been able to do these games all 6 years. He's gotten better. It's scary.
How has he gotten better, Hank?
Let me tell you how he's gotten better. There are two things that I thought he needed to improve early in his career. And that just, all young running backs go through that. It's like a young quarterback. His vision increases in terms of the entire field and the understanding of defenses, you know? At first, things happen so fast, you kind of, it's just read and react and, you know, it's to let your ability take over. But then you start really understanding run forces and schemes and everything else. And the game, you know, you hear it all the time, but the game slows down, even for running backs. I thought early on he wasn't a very good goal line runner because he wasn't decisive enough, which is what you have got to be, at the goal line. Mm-hmm. And then I was worried about early on his first year. You know, once he got to the second level, did he have that burst? And I'll tell you what now, when he gets even, he's leaving right now. And so I think he's dramatically, obviously improved in every one of those areas. And I think it also helps. Early on, he didn't have the best offensive line in the world, okay? And he was making guys miss because you can't block everybody in a run play. And most run play designs on this level, you can't account for everybody. There's one guy that the running back has to beat. Hopefully he's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 yards off the ball, and you beat him, and you do your thing. Well, LT had maybe, you know, had very, very small caves to beat this guy. It's like trying to beat somebody in a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as this offensive line got better, now we're seeing what is going to happen when LT gets room to make a guy miss.
Right.
I mean, he makes guys look silly, and then he gets to the next level, and then he makes those guys look silly. And that's how you get the big numbers.
Yeah, and he has most definitely done that. Now, how much credence do you give to the fact that Phillip Rivers is starting his first playoff game and that he, you know, could be susceptible to a Patriot defense that kind of flexes on him a little bit?
This is a guy, 25 years old, that's matured to the age 35. He's a lot like Brady. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's a junkie. He grew up around the game. He's a ball boy for his dad's high school, you know, high school football team. His dad was a high school football coach. You know, he's been around it. He was a 4-year starter at NC State, played in 5 bowl games, MVP in all of them. He watched Drew Brees for 2 years. He's been around it. He saw the Jets playoff game and the preparation, and he saw that from the sideline. He absorbed all that. And you know, here's a cat that he's been married through it all. So can you imagine being 25 years old, doing what he's doing, has a wife and 3 daughters already,
mm-hmm.
and 2 dogs that are females. So he's dealing with 5 females at home to begin with. So I don't think anything he sees on Sunday is going to rattle him. Was that a sexist remark? I hope
not. No, I don't think so. I don't think so in the least. I believe me, I get it. Health-wise, I know that even your wideouts, McArdle and Parker in particular, I know have been banged up a little bit. How are they? I mean,
they're going to be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, McArdle played against Arizona. Had been battling a calf and a hamstring, and of course, Eric Parker had a neck problem. Excuse me, and didn't return punts, but he played wide receiver last week against Arizona.
Okay.
And with the week off, these guys are fine. LT got kicked. He was okay. The only guy that really is questionable right now is Jacques Césaire.
Right.
Who is the number one rotating defensive lineman, sustained a sprained knee against Arizona, and that doesn't look good.
I know Castillo's okay, though, right?
Yeah, he's back. And,
okay.
And he is, keep in mind, he's missed, gosh, I don't know how many games, seven games, whatever. He still finished with seven sacks. Guy's a beast.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so, I think that's certainly one of the huge matchups, I think, to watch on Sunday is the Patriots' offensive line, which can be susceptible at times to quickness at the corners, mm-hmm. against the defensive front, for San Diego. And if you want to look for an individual matchup, Matt Light's probably going to block on Sean Merriman.
Yeah, but then are you going to single Castillo?
You know what? That's a very good question. It'll
Thank
be interesting
you.
To see how they play that.
If you're going to double Castillo, you're going to single Merriman or Jamal Williams.
Exactly the point.
Therein lies the beauty of this defensive scheme and this defensive front, and the same for the Patriots. You know, you're going to single Vince Wilfork?
Yeah.
Are you going to single Seymour?
Yeah.
Ty Warren, how does Ty Warren become the second leading tackler on that team? At a defensive end position. That's unheard of.
Well, especially when this Patriots defensive front plays a two-gap scheme,
yeah,
which normally allows your backers to get in there and make those plays.
Right.
So if you've got a lineman that's making those kind of stops, he's having himself a hell of a year.
You know what? And you say two-gap. Do people even know what two-gap is?
I think our audience, honestly, is fairly intelligent where that comes from.
Okay.
I really do.
All right.
I think, what we've tried to do is simplify it for them and basically say, look, it's your job to allow the front not to make a push so the backers can fill in the open spots and make the tackle.
Well, here, let me explain it in other terms.
Go.
Okay? If you're playing two gap, let me explain the defense of the difference of the defenses.
Go.
Luis Castillo, our left end,
mm-hmm.
and the 34 defense will play inside of the tackle, always slanting, always moving, always charging in that inside gap between the guard and the center.
Okay.
So that's a gap defense. That's a one-gap defense, okay? And everybody else is responsible for a gap,
mm-hmm.
okay? You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So the nose tackle might have the A gap, which is between the guard and center on the right side,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Mike or Mac backer would have that gap to his left.
Correct.
Between the other guard and center.
Gotcha.
So everybody has a gap, okay?
Right.
Now, a two-gap means you're playing head up. You're mm-hmm. hitting, you're shedding. You're going to get hit and shed, and you're going to, A, try to, control at least one, if not two blockers, because most run plays are designed to double-team at the point of attack,
mm-hmm.
which allows the linebackers. But you're responsible to hit and then play off and play both gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Play both gaps to your right and to your left.
Right.
So that's kind of a simple way to explain it.
Right, yeah. And I think, honestly, the kind of year Warren has had because of the fact that he plays in this two-gap system that the Patriots like to employ, I think it was a big, big disappointment that he did not make the Pro Bowl.
Well, Pro Bowl is a lot like the Hall of Fame, I personally, I don't know what people flip out over Paris Hilton about. You know what I'm saying? Or Pam Anderson, who, by the way, dates David Benn, our snapper.
No kidding.
Now and again, whenever she feels like it, after she dumped Kid Rock. So,
Wow. She gets around.
That?
She gets around.
That's high cotton, isn't it?
I would tell you. That's
David
pretty good.
David Benn, more games played than any Charger in history. Junior Seau and Russ Washington broke their record this week.
No kidding.
I did not
know that.
But see, he's a snapper, so I don't know if you can really count that as games played.
Yeah, we have the same thing with Lonnie Paxton. We just kind of wonder about that, too. How disappointing is it to not have a chance to have Seau and now Rodney Harrison come back and play against their old teams?
Not disappointing for me. I don't want to see Rodney.
I would imagine.
Let me tell you, Junior was playing great. I saw him on TV.
He had a fabulous year. I mean, he clearly showed that he has gas left in the tank. And I do hope that if he decides to do so, that he tries to come back another one. Because I think he could do it.
The problem with Junior is this. He's been hurt every year the last three or four years.
Understood.
And when you're playing 18 years in this game, which is amazing in itself,
mm-hmm.
at his position, as many hits as he's given and taken, the fact that he's even able to even consider playing, I mean, it goes back there with Clay Matthews, the old Browns linebacker. How do you play 18, 19 years in this league?
I don't know.
But he's, you know, I'm sorry. Your body can only, even a great body like Junior's, can only take enough.
Yeah,
I'd sign him in a heartbeat, but for, you know, in this day and age of how much it's going to cost and how effective, how much can he give you back, I don't know if I'd sign him.
That's extraordinary. I mean, it's just extraordinary.
I tell you what, he's the ultimate warrior. And you talk about a guy that I have more respect for and got screwed here was Rodney Harrison.
Mm.
And, you know, he comes out in 02. Here's how it came down there. He ended up, you know, being released.
Mm-hmm.
His opening game in Cincinnati before, you know, the Brown family decided to actually spend some money and put some field turf in Cincinnati. You know, opening game in Cincinnati, the last play before the first half, he plants and slips on loose turf and tears his groin. Mm-hmm. Most guys would be out for the year. Okay? Rodney the Warrior sucks it up, plays hurt, and they're trying to play him already in a scheme that doesn't fit his style. You know, we all know what Rodney is.
Mm-hmm.
He's at the line of scrimmage. He is a disruptor. You know, he is a disturber. He is an enforcer. He is a hitter. But they tried to make him play deep outside, deep half, deep third, which doesn't suit his game to begin with. And then to try to do it when he can't run, but he's out there limping around playing with a torn groin. And so at the end of the year, they said, hey, you know what? Maybe he's a little long in tooth making this kind of money, and he's hurt and didn't fit, you know, didn't even think it was in the scheme. So they let him go, and I thought it was one of the worst moves ever made by this organization.
Yeah, that is. Well, hey, you know, one guy's garbage is another guy's good fortune, and that's where we were very, very happy to have him. And he certainly
might have put you guys over the edge.
I think he certainly
might not have those two rings
had
he not come in and helped you win those two.
I think we will all allow that he has played a big, big part in that.
He's an amazing guy,
Hank. The other key that I wanted to get your thought on was Antonio Gates, because very few teams have had really a chance to shut him down, and because the Patriots will not have Rodney Harrison, the bulk of that, you know, matchup, at least individually speaking, will fall to the Patriots secondary, and probably a guy like James Sanders, who's been backing up Harrison at safety and has gotten the bulk of time. How do you see that? And trying to look at it from the other point of view, in other words, from a defensive point of view, what can Sanders do to try to slow Gates down?
Are guns legal?
Yeah, not that
you know,
I know
of. I mean, what does everybody try to do? You know, LT gets the ball 40% of the time.
Yeah.
So, come on. What's the game plan? Pay attention to LT. Stop him first and foremost.
Right.
But you can't just concentrate on doing the same thing, you know, and concentrate on one guy, because eventually, you know, the other guys will pull your pants down and embarrass you. You know, and I'm talking about Gates. I'm talking about McCardell. Vincent Jackson, a 6'5", 235-pound wide receiver we got that's had a breakthrough year.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Parker, best route runner on this team. You know, I mean, you know, the game has gotten so complex that, you know, you just can't solely concentrate on one guy or one way to take away a Gates. You can't put it in those simple terms. I think that the team, as simply as I can put it,
mm-hmm.
defensively game plan wise, without getting into the specifics and the X's and O's,
sure,
the team that does the best job of disrupting the pocket is going to be the team that wins this game.
Okay.
Because when Brady has faltered, he's been pressured. He's
right.
been beat up.
Right, true.
Okay, same thing with Phillip. When Phillip hasn't had a clean pocket this year, he struggled. So to put it in the simplest terms, I think, John, that's the deal.
All right, and I think that I'd buy that. I appreciate your spending a little time with us today. Thank you for giving us the insight and the knowledge. And I do believe that this one has every opportunity to be a very, very good one, and a game that fans will talk about for a long time.
Well, thank you. It's a blessing to be on with you. I've got horrible memories from my days playing in Foxborough with Freddie Smirlis and Tim Fox and
Meathead. I play with them.
All these guys, so, you know, but the New England fans got a lot to be proud of their team, and hey, may the best team Sunday win.
Absolutely. Thank you, Hank. Appreciate the time.
Okay.
You got it. Hank Bauer, again, a former Charger and the current radio analyst on the Chargers Radio Network, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. I got to admit, he had some great stuff to bring, and I can't say that I wasn't surprised that he said what he said, because I think you just got to boil this game down in as simple a fashion as you possibly can, and that is, you know what? The team that makes the fewest mistakes is going to win. The team that manages, as Hank just mentioned, manages to disrupt the pocket of the opposing quarterback the most is going to win. That's what's going to happen. You know, LT is going to get some yards. Phillip Rivers is going to get some completions. Tom Brady is going to get some completions. The Patriots running game is going to get some yards. This one, you know, as long as all things are equal, this one's going to go right down to the wire. And as I suggested, it's going to be nail-biting time. It's going to be sit on the edge of your seat kind of time. And that's the way a playoff game with two quality teams should be. Everybody talks about, oh, we're going to blow them out. Oh, I think we're going to win. Oh, these guys, who have they played? Well, they haven't got nothing. They haven't. Wait until they see us. You know, that's just not educated. You can be boisterous and you can be a fan of your own team, and you can have plenty of confidence. And it's one thing to go out there and talk smack, but you better be able to back that smack up. Both teams can do that right now. And we've talked a little about that over the course of the last couple of days in terms of trying to compare numbers and compare schedules and who teams have beaten and who they've lost to. And, you know, let's face it, there is a slight edge to the Chargers, and that's why I give them a slight edge in the game on Sunday. Now it's going to be time for you. Tell me I'm full of it, and tell me I'm wrong, and tell me who you think will win the game. If not the Patriots, then if you think the Chargers will win, give me the score. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Let's sneak a timeout in here, and then we'll try to do... We didn't get Tom in yesterday, did we? We'll get to Tom Brady. We'll let you hear what he has to say about the Chargers. And then Russell Baxter will join us just after the top of the hour as well, as we break down not only the Pats and Chargers, but the rest of the NFL playoffs here inside the Playbook.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin Watson!
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Well, it's that time of year again when Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty new snack wrap from McDonald's. It's a premium chicken select with lettuce, cheddar jack cheese, and ranch sauce, all wrapped in a warm flour tortilla. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select, and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
This is Gary Gordecki's way of saying he's going to be taking it easy on Sunday morning, right? You may be the only person in Patriots Nation that'll be taking it easy on Sunday.
Four!
gonna get out, are we? Good for you.
That's right.
Wow. Now, are you traveling with the team tomorrow? No, that's why. Okay. Because I was about to say, if you're in San Diego, you'd be running around with a chicken, like a chicken with your head cut off. San Diego chicken. San Diego chicken's head cut off, right? It's not going to be easy this Sunday morning, or in this case, Sunday afternoon, for either the Patriots or the Chargers coming up. Gary's in there playing the drums and the keyboard. Why don't you sing, too? Oh, goodness. All right. Let's get to some emails, shall we? Edward sends this note. He says, I believe the Patriots will win. I think this could be a close game, but the strength of the quarterback and the defense proven ability to stop the run gives me comfort. However, I am concerned about the secondary and the fact that they have been playing soft, meaning they've been allowing teams to get 4 or 5 yards, catch the ball, then hit them. I wish they were able to play the receivers tighter. Well, I think we all do, but then again, you play them like that when you don't tackle well. Part of my opinion, anyway. Our friend Howard in Orange, Connecticut. Well, here we are, two more days into the analysis of the pending game, and I'm edging away from thinking this will be a low-scoring game. My initial thought on the game was a high-scoring affair, but I somehow convinced myself that the Patriots D would somehow manage to keep this a low-scoring game. The more I think about it, though, the more I am convinced this is going to be a game very similar to the Patriots' Super Bowl win against the Panthers. Starts out slow, both teams' D's dominate while the O's attempt to decipher what the D's are doing. Then just like that, Carolina game, it becomes a track meet. Perhaps even the last one with the ball wins the game. It may even come down to which D makes that one final stop or turnover to seal the game. Though I really think it ends up being the which O ends up with the ball last, with time to move the ball within field goal range to make the game-winning field goal. So Howard says, Pats 34, Chargers 31. But I could just as easily see it being reversed. One thing I do not expect to see is a repeat of the last game at Gillette where the Chargers trounced the Pats. Your analysis is pretty much right on. I would think, Howard, I just unfortunately have the Chargers 34, Pats 31 at this stage of the game. Let's get one more in here. We will share all the emails with you today. James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. John, I think it will be close and low scoring. Most of the game, it'll come down to someone making a mistake, whether it being a turnover or a bad penalty that will give the team that wins the short field and or an easy score. There will not be a repeat of the Jets and Chargers game of 2 years ago where both teams missed last-second field goals. The Patriots will win it on a late field goal from their untested kicker. And James says Patriots 20, Chargers 17. And oh, by the way, John, they will surprise you this Sunday by tackling much better than you think they will. That is what they do in the playoffs, play much better than they do in the regular season. If this is your last show, then it was great listening to you again this season. I hope you have a great year, so we have the pleasure of hearing you again next season. Well, thank you, James. I appreciate the point. And hopefully we will be back again next Tuesday if the Patriots win. Then we have another week of playoffs to go through here in terms of analysis inside the playbook. All right, let's let you listen into what Patriots, and again, your thoughts are still welcome. Plenty of time to get it in. webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. That's how you send us your prediction for Sunday's game and how you think the game will boil down, how it will break down, and why one team has an edge over the other. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, will he have an edge perhaps over the Chargers defense? Let's see what he has to say to members of the Patriots media.
All righty. Let's talk about San Diego.
7-1 on the road in San Diego, undefeated at home. Let's talk about this matchup coming up.
Yeah.
And how well you've played on the road.
Yeah, we've done some good things on the road. Is this on? Can we turn that off? Can we turn that volume down? Yes, it's on. We've played well at times on the road. It's a tough team. Good in all three phases. It's a big challenge. What they do offensively is they keep the ball away from you with that great running back, very good receivers, Pro Bowl quarterback, great offensive line, one of the best tight ends in the league. I guess they got 9 Pro Bowlers or something like that, 9 All-Pros. Like half their team's All-Pros. It's defense, they rush the quarterback, they cover, they play smart, they're aggressive, they stop the run. They do everything. They're 14-2 for a reason, so it's a big task, but hopefully we'll be ready.
Look at your receivers, seeing what they've accomplished this season from where they started. What stands out to you from that group?
Well, it's a hardworking group. I think it's the guys that have taken a lot of pride in what they do, and they've continue to get better each week. And, you know, a lot of it's just learning the system, trying to figure out a role. And obviously Jabbar and Rashe have really stepped up. Troy's been very dependable. Chad's finding a role. You know, we're very comfortable with what we're doing in the passing game.
Look at Sean Merriman, and maybe not only he, because their whole front four, front seven, front three, I mean, it's great. How do you stay away from him, you personally?
Almost? Yeah, do your best. I mean, you're not going to outrun him. He's 270 pounds. But he runs like a, you know, he runs like a deer. He's powerful. He's quick. He's plays the high motor. If it's not Merriman, it's Phillips or Edwards or Godfrey or Castillo or Olshansky or Williams. I mean, the front seven's just, they're dominant. So it's the, you know, best defense we've probably faced. They present a lot of problems for you in pass protection. They're so big, you know, they cause a lot of problems in running the ball. They're one of the best teams on first down. They create more second and third and long opportunities than any team in the NFL. You know, they're good on third down, and it's exactly what you want from a defense. So
Rivers is going into his first playoff game. Obviously, your playoff game debut was pretty memorable, but do you remember how you felt going into that? It was like cold nerves or cold.
Snowy day.
Are there similarities, or did you any trepidation or nerves because you hadn't experienced that before?
God, it's a lot of, it's a bunch of hits ago. I hardly remember what I had for lunch. Yeah, I mean, it's his third year, so, I mean, it's not like he's a rookie or anything. I mean, he's been playing. He's been on the team for 3 years. He's 14-2. He's done a lot of great things for him. I'm sure this situation isn't too big for him. He seems like he's a very competitive guy, and you know, he's very good at what he's been doing this year. So, you know, I don't think this situation's too big. I mean, obviously the pressure's elevated, but, I mean, he's obviously handled it very well.
Did you feel elevated pressure when you went into that game?
I mean, like I said the other day, it's probably more of over the course of the week what you're doing with your time and making sure you're just taking care of what you normally take care of and not letting everything else get to you. Just because ultimately once the ball's kicked off, you're playing football, and that's what you've been doing all year. So no reason for him to get away from what he's been doing. He's been doing a great job.
You mentioned that you're playing a team that's got, what, how many ball throws on the field. I mean, the fact that you're not looking at twos is set up enough, but do you in the locker room in here say, you know, that sticks in here for a little bit, that you don't have a first team all pro in your locker room?
No, I mean, I think they're just, they're that way for a reason. They're 14-2, they deserve it. I mean, they got great players, guys who are dominant players in the league, LaDainian and Gates and Merriman, Williams, their kicker. I mean, they got Keel. He's a damn good player. I mean, everybody's playing well for him. So you try to find matchups that work in your favor, but there's an awful lot that, you know, when you got all pros on the other side of the ball, you just got to try to do your best to hang in there.
Still mad at Marty, or would you like Blitzy in general?
Do I like it? I mean, I don't care what they do. Blitz, you know, cover, I don't care. It's all that matter what they think they can do to stop us. Or sometimes it clears up reads a little bit just because you realize you're not going to have as much time. But initially, you just probably get to the guys who you think are your, you know, your best one-on-one matchups out there. Whereas zone coverage, you got to read it out a little bit more. So.
Do you feel better equipped? Do you feel the team in total is better equipped to handle that kind of pressure than you did earlier in the year?
Because
you're on the same
team as those teams. And we've handled it better at times than others. Like the first time, the second time we played the Jets, we didn't handle it very well. This time we handled it much better. It's just all about preparation, and I think, you know, this, you know, it's another big blitz team, about a 50% blitz team, so they bring it. You know, they get to the quarterback, so it's going to be a challenging day for the guys up front to handle the blitz pickup. It's going to be difficult for, you know, on the road for all the communication stuff that normally happens on the road, and then for the receivers to get open against one-on-one coverage. It'll be challenging.
Tom, I've read where people have said this arguably has been your best year. You've done more with less. I mean, would you say that's a fair characterization?
Well, I mean, we're 12-4, 13-4 now, so we've had a pretty good year. And in the passing game, we've been very efficient at times. Some days it hasn't looked so good. I think early we started in the year, and just getting familiar with a new group of players is challenging for everybody. But over the second half of the year, it's been pretty good. I mean, we've done a much better job all the way around. And protection, routes, throwing the ball, catching the ball. It's been very productive and efficient the last, you know, whatever, 7-8 weeks. So I'm glad it's worked out that way. But there's always learning curves from my standpoint, from the standpoint of the receivers, and we're at a much better place than we were, you know, earlier in the year. There's no doubt.
What did you do to take this group, obviously that's primarily all new, and mold it into a unit that can do what it's doing now? I mean, did you take more of a leadership role than you had in the past when you had veterans who had been here a while?
Well, I mean, we get great coaching, and the guys, the new guys who have been here have realized that, like Jabbar and Rashay and Chad, and they've taken to the coaching, and they've come in and worked hard every day. I mean, it's a very hard-working group of players. It's not like we ever take days off, and we practice extremely hard. I mean, this is the first time, you know, we've been very healthy at the receiver position. Rashay has, like, missed one day of practice all year. I remember days, you know, last year where, you know, David wouldn't practice all week and he'd play, or Dion wouldn't practice. And so we've been very healthy, and I think that's really accelerated the learning process, because we've been able to go out there and practice every day, and that's where the improvements have really come.
Did you take any added responsibility yourself to try and get this group up to speed, in addition to what you may have done in the past?
I mean, I try to spend as much time as I can, you know, each year trying to do whatever I think it needs, so. Probably no different than previous years. I mean, 100% of my time, so it's hard to give much more than that.
Tom, with their defense and the way they, how quick they are and coming at you, whatever, do you feel like you have to play a perfect game from the sense of your decision making and no turnovers?
Oh yeah, pretty much. Yeah, this has got to be as perfect as you can make it, because they don't give you many second chances, and they're, you know, they go after the football and they turn it over quite a bit. Intercept passes, they're so aggressive, and a bunch of three and outs this year. They do everything well, so we've just got to figure out a way to try to move the ball. When we get in a red zone, try to be productive in a red zone, but you're not going to get a whole lot of second chances versus these guys.
Thanks, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, of course, from here at Gillette Stadium with members of the media. We welcome you back as we get underway with Hour 2 here inside the Patriots playbook. I'm John Rook, and as he does every week at this time, Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joined us on the program. Russell, how goes the battle today?
It goes well, John. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Getting ready for what we think, I think we can anticipate that this game on Sunday to be, if not the best, certainly one of the best of the four that are going to be offered in the league.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. I think if you had to take a straw poll of what game everybody's looking forward to, the fourth one is probably the first one everyone's looking forward to. And the first one is probably the second one, everybody. I think that, you know, inevitably the AFC matchups look like the more attractive matchups here. And, you know, I wouldn't downplay the other two. It's certainly Philadelphia and New Orleans, who did play earlier this year and had a very, very entertaining game. They were kind of a back and forth until the Saints took over the ball with about 8.5 minutes left. And the Eagles never saw the ball again. John mm-hmm. Carney kicked the field goal, and one of the reasons the Saints are hosting this game is because of that win.
Right, absolutely. We got off with Hank Bauer of the Chargers just a short while ago and basically trying to look at this game, and he really seems to think that, as a lot of big games do, you know, when two teams are relatively evenly matched, and I think we can agree that both of these teams are probably right about there in terms of the Patriots and the Chargers now, that it's going to boil down to, you know, small things like, you know, fundamentals and kicking game and, you know, who's going to make the fewer mistakes. Do you get a sense that this could be one of those games, or have you sort of leaned in one direction this week prior to this point in time and think that one team actually does bear a favorite over the other?
No, I think I'd lean with Hank's analysis there. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact of the way how Marty Schottenheimer, frankly, has coached in the playoffs. And I'm not just talking about the 5-12 record that he's had and the numerous games which have kind of seemingly blown up for him in the playoffs. But his coaching style in the playoffs is very, very close to the vest. If you go back and look, you know, Marty's teams, even his better scoring teams, once they get to the postseason, you know, 10 points, 17 points, shut out in the 92 playoffs when they played San Diego or the Chiefs. You know, 2 years ago, they had a very, very balanced team. Big year from Drew Brees, big year from LaDainian Tomlinson, Antonio Gates. 17 points in overtime in a loss to the Jets. To me, it seems it's more the style of how Marty coaches in the playoffs that would lead you to believe that it's going to be little things that decide this here.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the knock, such as it is, on Marty Schottenheimer and his inability so far to win in the playoffs? I mean, let's face it. I think we all realize that you know, he has had great success in regular seasons, and then he has not had that kind of success in the playoffs. You had a chance to work with a guy when he was with ESPN a few years ago as well. Were you able to get any insight as to why somehow that just seems to have been a brick wall for him?
You know, I don't know if necessarily I've gotten any insight on that part about Marty. I can tell you he's a man who loves the game, who really understands the facets of the game. In fact, one of the most interesting things that Marty ever said to me was, and it just showed you about, you know, coaching in general. And he talked about, you know, areas of the game that we don't usually talk about a lot. He told me once that he could coach, or he told a number of us, he could coach any position on the field, including quarterback. Which, and if you go back and you think, you're like, well, you know, Marty and quote-unquote Marty Ball and, you know, running game, conservative offense, that's always been kind of a label on him. You're thinking, well, Marty Schottenheimer could coach a quarterback? You wouldn't ordinarily think that. But he said there was one aspect of the game he said he could not coach, and that was offensive line play, that continuity along the offensive line, which is so very, very important. And that's really the basic reason all eight of these teams are still alive, is their continuity in the trenches, both offensive line and defensive line. We'll get into that later. But, you know, he's a guy. Listen, there's only been seven coaches in NFL history that have won at least 200 games combined, regular season, postseason. He's one of them. He's now sixth on the all-time list. It's, you know, up until last year, you know, Bill Cowher was another guy who couldn't get there. You know, after they, after the Steelers lost to the Patriots in the 2004 title game, you know, him and, you know, the funny thing is Bill Cowher has always been considered kind of Marty Schottenheimer light until he finally got the Super Bowl victory. I will say this. There's only one time way to lose 12 games in the playoffs, as you well know, John, and that's get to the playoffs 12 times.
Right.
So, you know, for all the knocks on the Jim Moores, who never won a playoff game, he was 0-6. You know, but the Saints never enjoyed any playoffs, getting to the playoffs until he came to the franchise. You know, Chuck Knox was another guy who never had an enormous amount of success in the playoffs. You know, that's why I think it would be interesting, and this is not my prediction, it would be interesting if it happened to be San Diego and Indianapolis in the title game, because that would mean one of the people that, you know, we have our list, you know, I guess we have an unofficial list who we like to talk about not winning the big one, mm-hmm. or not getting to the big one. What are people going to do if it's San Diego and Indianapolis and it's Marty on one side and it's Peyton Manning on the other side?
Right, right.
Somebody's going to have to get that monkey off their back unless they play into six overtimes.
Somebody will.
Yeah. So I think eventually these things all even out, and then once Marty, if indeed he does win a Super Bowl title, the other things will be forgotten. I've talked to various players along during my writing days and stuff like that. And it's a funny thing about the Super Bowl. You could lose six of them. But if you win one, it kind of wipes out the other six.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's
and people
true.
Seem to forget the six losses.
That's true.
And, you know, look at the Denver Broncos. Think about the Denver Broncos. That's a perfect example, actually. People more remember them winning back-to-back Super Bowls with John Elway than they do with the four that they lost.
Correct.
And, by the way, three of those were John.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then they do. The losses are soon forgotten when it comes to the Super Bowl era. We put so much into winning that Super Bowl that sometimes it kind of clouds some of the other things.
That's very true, very true.
I'm sorry to interrupt myself.
No, it's all right.
Does anybody remember the Patriots lost their first two Super Bowls?
That's correct.
They forget about it.
Nobody.
About 35-21. No, you think about the fact that they've won three Super Bowl titles in the last 5 years.
Right.
And maybe could make it 4 out of 6 years.
Right. Very, very true. Russell Baxter with us here on Patriots Playbook. How do you think this game then will kind of settle itself out? I mean, it seems like there are a couple of key points that you can look at. I think we all realize that the Patriots want to try to confuse a guy like Phillip Rivers in his first playoff game. I think the Patriots obviously have got to find a way to at least contain LaDainian Tomlinson. I think we can borrow Dan Patrick's phrase, you know, you can only hope to contain him in this stretch of the season. And then again, it's going to be important, I think, for the Chargers on the other side of the football to find a way to get to Tom Brady, because clearly that's where he's had his troubles this year.
Well, you know, it's an interesting series, you know, and you're going back, you know, 20, 30 years, of course, but you know, the Chargers have actually beaten the Patriots the last two times they faced them,
mm-hmm.
and ended long streaks in the process. You know, in 2002, the Patriots went out to San Diego. They had beaten San Diego 10 times in a row going back umpteenth years. And LaDainian Tomlinson had 217-yard rushing and two long touchdown runs, and the Chargers wind up winning the game. Fast forward to last year up in Foxborough. When San Diego ended the Patriots' home winning streak at 21 games overall, including the playoffs, beat them pretty soundly, 41-17. Drew Brees had a big day, and I believe one of those touchdown passes that Brees threw, and he threw two on the day, was some guy named Rashay Caldwell, who had a touchdown reception, who's now on the other side of the ball. So the worm has turned in the last two times, and of course Tomlinson had over 130 yards rushing as well. They really handled the Patriots. Mostly in the second half. In fact, the last two meetings against San Diego, the Patriots have not scored in the second half of either one of those games.
Yeah, I find that really be a curious number.
And I think that's
right.
Very, very kind of interesting. And the one thing about San Diego, listen, I still don't think they're a great pass defense. I still think run defense are pretty solid and block Jamal. I mean, listen, we have two sturdy, how's this for a word, sturdy nose tackles in this
mm-hmm.
game.
Yes, we do.
And Jamal Williams and Vince Wilfork. And, you know, you've got a linebacking core out in San Diego led by Sean Merriman, who, you know, had his off-the-field issues that kept him off the field for four games. But still, 17 sacks in 12 games, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you have, to me, the best defensive line in football. Now, I know that sounds weird to say it for a three-man line, but I insist that Warren and Wilfork and Richard Seymour are the best defensive line in football. So there's a lot of really, really good players in this game. And, you know, coaching is going to be a difference. The kicking game is going to be a difference. You know, you got two workhorse backs. Two workhorse backs who have pretty good backups.
Yep.
With Lawrence Maroney, the rookie, and Michael Turner, the reserve for San Diego. So, you know, if you're I don't want to say an old-fashioned football fan. If you're a trench kind of guy, you enjoy the game in the trenches, you're going to see a lot of good play this week.
I totally agree. That's why I think for even a football purist, just a fan who doesn't have a particular allegiance to either side, this is the one game that you really can't afford to miss this weekend.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. Listen, you've got the preeminent, and obviously, and I have held off on this word with the Patriots, but now I'm ready kind of to say it, and that's dynasty, okay?
Really?
Yeah.
That's big for this reason, John.
Now we're talking about being in the playoffs 4 straight years and 5 out of 6,
mm-hmm.
okay? The thing that, you know, the dynasty word got thrown out to me too quickly. Now, I'm not downplaying what the New England Patriots did by winning 3 titles in 4 years, but there was that little matter of a donut hole of missing the playoffs after the 2002 season.
Right.
To me, the word dynasty suggests sustained excellence. Now we're seeing the Patriots in the playoffs every year, and now we see the Patriots in the divisional playoffs every year. Okay, it's not like they're one and out. You know, the thing about go back to the Cowboys. When the Cowboys won their 3 Super Bowls in 4 years in the 90s, people kind of missed the fact that they were in the playoffs 6 straight years and 8 out of 9.
Right.
Those are dynasty-type numbers. When the Steelers won their 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, they're also a playoff team 8 straight years. You can now see that this franchise is making perennial trips to the playoffs, okay? And that's the combination. Now, listen, I know the Colts have been in the playoffs numerous straight years, but they haven't won a title. You have to combine the excellence with the continuity, and that's how you get the thing word dynasty. And now I lean more toward it now, because if the Patriots had won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years and then suddenly fallen off the face of the earth, that to me is a totally different story.
Mm-hmm.
And not falling. In fact, this Patriot team is better than last year's Patriots team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And let me ask you this.
And not just based on win-loss record as well.
No, that's
it's a
also
more balanced football team.
It is, it is. If the Patriots do not win, ultimately, the Super Bowl this year, does that take away from this dynasty, as you put it?
No, I don't think it does at all. No,
okay.
No, because the Denver Broncos in 1996 got to the playoffs, lost in the first round. Then they followed that up with back-to-back Super Bowl champions, okay? They won consecutive titles. They had a really good 3-year run, okay? The Patriots' run, other than the burp in 2002, and to me, it being in the playoffs 4 consecutive years now kind of erases the burp. That's my only point I'm making, is you've got to do this over a long period of time. And to me, 4 years is not a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're talking about 5 times in 6 years and 4 straight. And that, is to me, is different. That's just different when it comes to the quote-unquote dynasty. They are now putting themselves in position to be the team of this decade, 2000. So, and the way Tom Brady seems to just adjust to a different cast of receivers every year shows you how great he truly is.
No arguments there.
No.
Well, seeing as how you're Mr. Numbers, the one number that stands out to me, I think that really kind of boils this game down to its bare essence. And I've mentioned this, that I think it's important, certainly, the Patriots try to get out to a lead here as quickly as possible. And I think it's certainly even more important for the Patriots to have a lead at halftime. Why? Because all time in the playoffs, the Patriots are 15-0 with a halftime lead. How about that one?
That's hard to buck that trend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how are they in the playoffs when they have the lead after 4 quarters?
I believe they're 18-11.
That's pretty impressive.
That's not bad either. Not bad.
Well,
either.
Listen, the one thing you have seen, I go back to, just some of the play calling by the Patriots and the aggressive, I think one of the things that makes them so dangerous all the time, and especially in the postseason, where it seems that it seems like they up the ante when it comes to play calling. I thought one of the best calls I've seen in a playoff game in the last 4 or 5 years, when they're at Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game a couple years ago, the Steelers had just been stopped on 4th-and-1. Bettis fumbled. The fumble was inconsequential. He didn't get to the yard marker anyway. And the Patriots go right up top to Deion Branch, 60-yard touchdown, beautiful pass right in his hands, on his fingertips, right over the middle of the field. They turned a 3-0 into a 10-0 real, real quick, and the route became on in there. And that their aggressiveness and not sitting back, knowing how to work. It was interesting about last week's game. The Patriots do such a good job of controlling the clock in their own way.
Right.
Someone mentioned to me last week, boy, this first. If you remember the Colts-Chiefs game last week,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I think the first half actually technically took 21 minutes. Okay, there was a lot of running. There were some turnovers, obviously. Peyton Manning had some issues.
Yeah.
But the game went fairly fast. Last week's Patriots game in the first half seemed to go a little slower, but you could tell what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Jabbar Gaffney, mm-hmm. out pattern, 6 or 7 yards. Rashay Caldwell, out pattern, 6 or 7 yards. Get out of bounds, run left, run right, first down. Okay, that's how they just seemed to move their offense, mostly in the first half. That opened things up later in the game, when I believe Gaffney had that long reception of, I think, 30-plus yards, when he was wide open over the middle of the field. They are easily, in my mind, and I don't want to say that I'm trying to disparage anybody else, they're such an intelligent football team, especially during this run. They know how to play the game. They don't understand how to play the game. And that's all the preparation. That's all the homework. That's all the coaching staff. And that's Brady understanding his role. That's what, that's what makes them such a tough out in the playoffs. I think you mentally get drained when you play the New England Patriots in the playoffs these days.
Well, then kind of leading me here to the ultimate, I noticed that the Chargers this season, they've obviously come into this thing having won 10 in a row. They were unbeaten at home this season. NFL's overall best record at 14-2. But the thing that impresses me the most is that they were 5-0 against teams from playoff teams from a year ago. So Chargers, you know, whether you like their schedule or you don't, the Chargers were at least impressive enough. And I don't think that the Patriots are going to come in and, quote unquote, scare them.
Listen, it's not who you play, it's how you play.
Yep.
You know, for people who don't realize this, the NFL schedules are set up 8 years in advance now. You know, with the exception of two games and how you finish, being, if you're a first place team, you play, two of the other first place teams in your conference. 14 of your 16 games are predetermined. I mean, we could go over the 2009 schedule, maybe we'll do that in March for some of the teams, but it's luck of the draw. And you know, with this, see, to me, it's kind of funny. We talk a lot about schedule,
yeah,
and we talk about this team played easy, this playing hard, and yet we around also boast of parity in the league. Those two sentences don't make any sense. If you have parity, what difference does it make who you play? It's how you play. And San Diego has played pretty well all year. You know, I still think their secondary is a little iffy, and it has been an issue with them at times. It has cost them games late. You know, cost them a late game in Baltimore this year, cost them a late game against Kansas City. I know those are the only two games they lost, but they have weathered a lot of storms this year. Phillip Rivers, first year as a quarterback, not great down the stretch. You know, three of his last six games, John, under 50% completion percentage.
Right.
So as you find out, and I think this happens more and more in this league every year, you know, it used to be somebody would be having a great year, and the next year you'd find a way to shut him down. Now it takes about 9 or 10 games to figure it out. Okay, there was enough film on Tony Romo for teams to eventually figure out you got to try to keep him in the pocket. There's been enough film on Phillip Rivers this year where teams have figured out what to do with him. And if there's been film, you can bet Bill Belichick has gone over it 14 different times. So you know, do they want the ball in Phillip Rivers' hands and make him want to win the game? That's what the Patriots ideally would like to do. Yep. And I'm sure it's not something that Marty Schottenheimer would like to do. He would like the ball in the hands of LaDainian Tomlinson. So this is a real – I think why people are so excited about this game is you've got the hottest team in the league and the team with the best record against the preeminent team of this decade right now.
Yep, and that's why I'm going to ask you now who you think is going to win. Nothing like putting you on the spot.
Well, that's quite all right. I picked Dallas and New England in August for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Dallas is gone. I can't pick them anymore.
That's true.
But New England is still alive, so I will stick with my pick and go with the Patriots.
Okay. And other than just sticking with your pick, what do you think the edge will be? How do you think the Patriots will go about getting there?
Well, I think, I think San Diego's defense is very good. Obviously, they have to find a way to block Sean Merriman. But I will say this. I think the Patriots' offensive line this year, you know, this is just the eye test. Of the years that they had this playoff run, I think this has been their best offensive line. I know they had a very, very hot offensive line at the end of 2001 when they kept everybody together. I think for the final nine games after, you know, going through various changes and got hot at the end of the year. But I'm talking about from top to bottom. I think this has been their best offensive line play. And I think they will find ways because Sean Merriman is a really good rush linebacker. He makes explosive plays as a defensive guy.
Right.
But I don't know if he's a great coverage linebacker. And the Patriots seem to do these things with these tight ends, you know, on occasion.
Yeah.
Now, although last week we didn't see much out of the tight ends. Last week we saw out of the receivers. And by the way, I have to give Bill Belichick a lot of credit because he also figured out, not only did he beat the Jets last week, he obviously was gearing up his Florida receivers to beat Ohio State last Monday night. I found it interesting that Jabbar Gaffney and Rashay Caldwell led the Patriots in receiving last week, two former Florida receivers.
That's right.
So maybe he knew something that obviously Ohio State didn't know as well.
It was the karma. That's right.
I think that maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Karma chameleon. But in any case, and if the Chargers lose, it'll be another, you know, Marty this, Marty that, Marty this, Marty that, which will be totally unfair because they've had a heck of a year. But here's a fact to keep in mind, and I don't know why this is. I think it has a lot to do with the depth of the AFC. has a lot to do with the parity in the league. San Diego Chargers finished 14-2 this year,
mm-hmm.
okay, which means they had the best record in football. Seven of the last 9 years, the team with the best record in football has not won the Super Bowl.
Yep. That one, I figured that one would come up before too much later. That's true. Seven of the last 9 years. What does it say? Is it just, does that say about the parity, do you think?
Well, I think it's a combination of, I think it's parity. I think it's also because, you know, this really run started with the Broncos winning the Super Bowl. You know, over that span, three wild cards have won the Super Bowl, by the way, all from the AFC, Denver, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. I think it has to say with how the worm has turned, in the AFC. You know, wasn't that long ago we were complaining about the NFC winning 13 consecutive Super Bowls. Now the AFC has won seven out of the last nine, and it just shows you from top to bottom. Because you don't, in the NFC playoffs, you know, especially under this format since 1990, you haven't seen the wild card succeed. You know, you rarely see them. Carolina got to the championship game last year, but you haven't seen wild card teams do well in the NFC. I'm not sure exactly why that is as well, and obviously we're not going to see it again this year because all the top seeds won. So this will be interesting. I will also say this. This is the round since 1990 where home teams have not only done well, they basically won about 80% of their games. They're 51-13 in this round, dating back to 1990. And in case you're wondering, over the 16 seasons since 1990, six times all four home teams won in the same weekend.
Wow. And because we had all four teams win last weekend, I don't know, statistically speaking, I don't know that doesn't change anything, but don't you feel like there's a little pressure on maybe some road team to kind of break through here?
Well, probably. I think the Patriots and the Eagles are the teams that most people think will win.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles are hot. The Chargers are hot, you know, but, you know, unfairly, I don't think it's so much a combination of Marty Schottenheimer coaching the Chargers as it is the respect that they have, that people have for the New England Patriots. Because, you know, here's one thing about the Patriots that people kind of forget, okay? During this run, it hasn't been like they've been just had this great playoff run because they've been winning a lot of home playoff games,
mm-hmm.
okay? They've won two AFC title games in Pittsburgh. Okay, I know they fell at Denver last week, but this is a team that can win anywhere at any time. And that's why I think you have so much respect for the New England Patriots. And they've done it in good weather. They've done it in bad weather. They've done it indoors. They've done it outdoors. They know how to win. It's a hard combination to beat.
Sure. Well, you brought up the Eagles, so I'd be remiss if we didn't try to touch on at least the other three games here briefly. Let's start with that Eagles-Saints game, and certainly the Eagles come in as arguably the hottest team in the NFC thus far. They won the NFC East five of the last 6 years. Does that give them a dynastic feel at all?
No, it kind of gives them maybe in some ways a pseudo Atlanta Braves type of feel. That's not a knock on the Atlanta Braves, but they did win a championship. I don't think you can, you know, I consider what the Braves did in baseball a dynasty in the sense because I know they got to World Series. Remember everything about the Eagles is they've 5 and 6 years, but it is only one Super Bowl appearance. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
How many times did they lose the title game? You have to take all the factors in. And so on. And you see, it's very interesting because in this decade of 2000, and keep in mind that Bill Belichick was 5-11 his first year
right.
with the Patriots in 2000.
Right.
The top three teams win-loss record in this league since 2000 are the Colts, the Patriots, and the Eagles.
Okay.
Now, if you look at the playoff records of the Eagles and the Colts, they pale in comparison to what the New England Patriots have done over that stretch.
Right.
So you've got to combine excellence with longevity, okay? And being there every year, I think that makes them a perennial contender. But the fact of if the Eagles had been like the Bills and gotten to four straight Super Bowls, you know, I give the Bills much more credit for losing four straight Super Bowls than I get for teams who actually never got there. So,
as far as that being said,
I like the Saints on Saturday night, by the way.
I was just going to say, do you like the Saints?
I like the Saints on Saturday night. I think Sean Payton, his experience knowing and understanding how Philadelphia and Andy Reid works, his days with the Giants and his days with the Cowboys, and what a great game earlier this year, back and forth. Saints jump out, Eagles rally, Saints come back, and then Saints hold the ball for 8.5 minutes and kick a field goal to win it. I think they'll be very juiced up. I think it's going to be an electric crowd. The Saints have had their share of playoff problems. I mean, they're the least successful team when it comes to the postseason. It's only the sixth time they've been in the playoffs in 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they got a little karma going, and I like their chances Saturday night.
All right, and then let's start then go with the very first game of the weekend with the Colts and the Ravens and the other AFC matchup. And, you know, I think that there are those that believe that Baltimore's defense will be too much for Peyton Manning, and I think there are just an equal number of people that feel like, you know what, Peyton Manning and the Colts might be able to do a number on them because we saw an improved defensive effort by the Colts last week.
Yeah, we did. I mean, you know, it's very, very interesting because if you would have said that the Indianapolis Colts were going to hold the Chiefs to 44 yards rushing, hold Larry Johnson to 32 yards rushing, and Peyton Manning was going to throw three interceptions,
I would have sent you to the funny farm.
And for me, it would have been a return visit. But if you would have said the Peyton Manning was going to throw three interceptions and they would win the game by 15 points, you would have been in the funny farm.
Right.
But that's what they did. And how funny would it be if Peyton Manning has another subpar game and the Colts manage to win again? You know what's funny is the Colts are dead last in rushing defense. I mean, I'll tell you how bad they've been. Even with last week's magnificent effort of 44 yards rushing, holding the Chiefs, the Colts have given up more yards rushing in their last seven games than the Baltimore Ravens have given up in 16 games this year. That's quite a disparity. That being said, the Baltimore offense I still don't think scares many people.
Right.
I think the Indianapolis defense is very familiar with Steve McNair of his days in the game. And to me, Steve McNair has done just enough. I think in this game you need to do more than just enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I'm kind of favoring the Colts myself in this particular instance. And certainly it'd be remiss.
We need Colts-Patriots again.
Yes, I was about to say. I think everybody in the real world, really, I would think, outside of San Diego, is rooting for that.
Well, I have to say this now in case it doesn't happen, but we need Colts and Patriots and tie score at the end. And Adam Vinatieri lining up for, wait a minute.
Yeah, I know. That'd be something, wouldn't it? I totally agree.
How interesting would that be?
Let's bring it back full circle then. The early game on Sunday at 1 p.m., the other NFC game. Seahawks at the Bears. Two teams that shouldn't be maligned like they are, but undoubtedly they are. Bears, obviously, simply because they've had struggles at quarterback. But then again, you know, the team has been able to sort of rescue Rex Grossman.
Well, it's safe to say. You know, this is a Bears team in the last 11 games has turned over the ball 31 times.
Wow.
22 of them by Rex Grossman, who I think could probably get a good endorsement from Pillsbury based on turnovers.
Right.
And you watch Seattle this year, they're a shell of what they were, the team that got to the Super Bowl last year. They've had a lot. You know, you think they missed Steve Hutchinson a little this year? They've had three different guys play left guard for them this year. Two different centers, two different right tackles. They've really lacked the offensive line continuity. But the Bears are a little banged up on defense as well. And, you know, everybody's predicting maybe a quick hook for Rex Grossman. I don't think that's going to happen. I still think they have their best chance to win with him.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of hang in there with Seattle. Champions until the throne. They're the NFC champions. And I think Mike Holmgren's going to wind up getting a return to the place where he won a Super Bowl 10 years ago. He's going to make a return trip to the playoffs there. I'm going to take Seattle at New Orleans in the NFC title game.
Wow, how about that?
So I'm actually going with three road teams to win this week.
Wow, you're stepping out. That's big for you.
Well, it's kind of bucking the odds. You know, last week all four home teams won. It was only the second time since they went to the playoff format in 1990 that all four home teams in the wild card round won the same weekend. But I just get a sense. It's based on the eye test more than anything else. You know, some of these teams aren't necessarily playing well. I think in the case of San Diego and New England, you have two teams that are both playing well, and you just have to pick a winner.
Right. Well, so the only home team you like then is New Orleans.
That's it. Yes.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere there as well.
Okay. Very good. Russell, you know, I realize that this is not the last week, but if the Patriots lose, then it's our last week for this program for at least this year. So I'd be remiss then if I didn't at least sneak this in and thank you from the bottom of my heart and all the Patriots fans that have listened at the course of the season for your insight and your willingness to spend a little time with us each and every Thursday to kind of break down the matchups, because I find that very few people do it as thoroughly as you do.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that. And I, to me, it's a chance to talk about football. More importantly, it's a chance to talk about football with someone I like.
Hey, thanks. That's great of you to say that. And you know what? I will pick on you one more week if the Patriots win. How's that?
Maybe 2 more weeks.
2 more weeks too? All right, we can do that too. That's Gary and his ball washing machine.
Well, that gives Gary maybe another week to dig up some music on me as well.
Yeah, I know.
And just remember, there's ever just a fallback, and you can't find the numbers. You can never go wrong with you. Keep me hanging on.
Very, very true. Hey, I like that. Very good. Oh, yeah. See, Gary, you missed that. Oh, he's looking. He's looking. He's reaching. He's searching. Now, see.
Dry off the ball and find the DVD.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the CD, I should say.
Exactly. Thanks, Russell. Appreciate
it. You're welcome, John.
You got it. That's Russell Baxter, the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, with us here on Patriots Playbook. I have to admit that that has been one of the more enjoyable things that we have done throughout the course of the season here on this particular program is bring him into the fold.
And,
the guy knows more. He has more knowledge in his little finger than most people have in their entire bodies. And the chuckle in the background belongs to a guy who also has a lot of knowledge about this Patriots team. Michael Felger, of course, from the Boston Herald, and has his afternoon drive program at 890 ESPN, and he's part of the Patriots Friday programming here on the Patriots Football Network as well. And he's in here in studio getting some stuff done early because, hey, the team's getting out of town tomorrow. So you got to get some stuff done early. And
absolutely.
You know,
talking to our fellas.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you read on this whole thing this week? I mean, honestly, from a pure football perspective, I can't wait.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It really is. There's so many great subplots to this game. I don't know that I've really recalled a game, maybe short of the Super Bowl, of the last few years that has had this much intrigue going into it. And I think part of that is because San Diego's just been downright good.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, it's another one of those cases, John, where it's sort of brains versus brawn. And that's not a exact analogy, but San Diego's more talented. They just are. I mean, I'll find it hard-pressed to find anyone who say that in terms of top-end talent, the Patriots are what the Chargers are. The Chargers have better players, I think, especially on the top end. But the Patriots are maybe tougher, maybe smarter, maybe more poised, certainly better coached, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
So this tells you, you know, how much is football really a team game, you know? And that's it. And that's why this is a fun game, because it's really going to play to all those great things that we love about the Patriots, you know, the teamwork and the coaching and the scheming and, you know, facing down more talented opponents and being tougher and right. All those things. I mean, that's how the Patriots win this game. Now, I don't know if they do, but that's what I think makes it an interesting matchup. It's another one of these high octane teams versus the sound, steady Patriots. That's
right.
Why it's great.
Absolutely. You mind if we run through a couple of emails here?
Go for
it. All right?
Do it.
All right. This one comes from PJ. It says, Rook, congrats on the podcast. By the way, we made podcast status this week. I know that really impresses you. But,
big.
Let's see. Loyal PFW in Progress listener, voted for your podcast multiple times. That's how we got to 50, Gary.
Oh, we might have to rescind it then.
No. Anyway, here we go. On to the Pats.
Hanging Chads.
Yeah, exactly. Hanging Chads. I feel that we need a lot to go right for the Pats to win, but I can never feel totally out of it with Bill and Tom Brady on our sidelines. Slow down, LaDainian. Make Phillip Rivers beat us. He's very good and may do that, but I would rather it be in the hands of a first-year starter than the league MVP.
You know, John, this is going to sound silly, but Tomlinson may be the least of my worries.
No kidding?
I just get the feeling they're going to stop him. I do.
Really?
And I'm based on what? And I'm picking the Chargers to win this game.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I have too, by the way. I'm also picking the Chargers.
I think it comes down to the other side of the ball. I mean, the Patriots defense,
yeah.
When's the last time the Patriots defense was really the problem with them losing a game? Maybe that Indy game, but
maybe.
They turned it over 5 times
yeah,
that game.
Yeah, so you can kind of almost excuse the defense from that performance. So yeah. you got
to... I mean, give you a time where the defense has cost this team a game. Going back to the middle of last year.
I don't recall one.
Even in Denver, that playoff game, Denver scored on 2 1-yard touchdown drives.
So you think it's the Patriots' offense that ends up...
I think the issue here is, can they protect the ball on offense? Can they move the ball on offense? Can they keep Tom Brady upright?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way I sort of see it unfolding, and I wouldn't be surprised if anything happens. Let's put it that way. I don't feel strongly about this. I'm not betting the mortgage on the San Diego Chargers, but I get the sense the game could unfold that Merriman and Sean Phillips... The Pats can't block those guys. Light and Kazier have had trouble with edge rushers the entire season. So those guys get into Brady's kitchen. There's a strip sack. There's a turnover. San Diego scores 7 easy points that way, maybe more that way. They put up a few scores of their own, but not a lot. I don't see the Chargers offense lighting it up against the Pats. I really don't. I think they're going to put up some scores through the course of normal action, maybe a couple scores off of turnovers, and I think the Pats are going to have a hell of a time scoring into the high 20s, which is what it may take.
No kidding. That's
sort of how I see it going. I think they can stop Tomlinson. I think any NFL team, John, if they really devote themselves to it, can stop any running back. All you need to do is look at last week in Indianapolis, where we go into that game saying,
no way Johnson's going to do it.
Oh, I mean, it's Larry Johnson. Yeah, right. Colts can't stop him. Here comes a 400-yard rushing game. They're going to pound him and pound him and pound him.
And look what happened.
That was everyone said that. 1,000 people out of 1,000 said that. And so what do the Colts do? They stuff 9 in the box and take away the run without any problem. Now, the Chiefs are a bunch of idiots because it seemed like they had no backup plan. Like, oh, Herm, they might stuff the run. You might need to do something else there. That's their fault. But the point is, even the worst...
Hello? Yeah. You play to win the game.
Even the worst run defense teams in the NFL, if you really devote yourself to it, can stop the run. And I don't think the Pats need to stuff 9 in the box to stop Tomlinson. I think they can do it with 7 or 8. You know, I think they'll stop Tomlinson.
Well, you mentioned that, of course, you think the Chargers will win, but we can also make an argument here. I think that Marty Schottenheimer has been very Herm Edwards-like in his playoff coaching in the past.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, that we'll see how that plays out. I mean, if it's close, I like the Chargers. Okay. And this isn't to say that I think the Chargers are a blowout better than the Patriots. But, again, it's just sort of, I think if it's a three-point game and it does come down to some decisions from Marty, as opposed to decisions by Brady and Belichick, I'm taking the Pats. So I do think it's going to end up being 2 touchdowns, but again, how it gets there is going to be not the normal course of action, turnovers, returns, etc. But it's interesting reading the stuff out in San Diego, how a lot of the play-calling duties on both sides, Marty has seceded to his coordinators, which is good news for the Chargers and their fans.
I would totally agree with that one. Mark from New Hampshire. Guys, I was on my iTunes trying to download PFW Progress, and I get this playbook with Rook. He's all right, but he's nothing like Tom Casale. How about that?
Who is? Who is like Tom Casale?
Nobody. He says, the game against the Chargers feels like the game before the Rams in the Super Bowl, and it's really quiet on the Patriots front. I think they're going to win this one in Patriot fashion.
Look
much
at that
hype.
Douchebag.
Yeah. Too much hype over the Chargers. Good listening to you guys this year. I don't know if I get the same feeling about the Rams in the Super Bowl, only because the Patriots were a decided underdog in that game. I mean, 2 touchdowns, 17-point underdog, I think they were going into that game, right?
Yeah, I don't think it compares insofar as this Patriots team is pretty good. I mean, they may not be elite like they were in 03 and 04, but they're still a pretty damn good team.
Yeah, yeah.
And San Diego's good, too. The gap between the Chargers and Patriots this year is not what it was between the Rams and Patriots that year. I thought that was a big gap.
Gabe in Pennsylvania. John, still sticking with my 31-30 Pats win. I hear you about the tackling, but hold on there for just 1 second. If the Pats were that bad tackling, and I'm not saying they aren't, but would they still be the defense with the fewest points allowed versus all the Super Bowl teams we've had? So they are tackling just from the 20 to the goal line. I've maintained all year long, Michael, that I think one of the Achilles' heels on this team is that they are a poor tackling team defensively. And I think they get their cue from Rodney Harrison, because Harrison is such a physical presence. He can hit a guy and the guy's going to fall down. But you see Asante Samuel and James Sanders, some of the others try to do that. Those players are not wrapped up.
Well, I think poor is too strong of a word. I think they're not perfect. They're not an impeccable tackling team. They're not. They've had blown plays. They certainly have. And you got to include, you know, a bad angle is a missed tackle in my book. You know, what James Sanders did last week against Jericho Cotchery, he didn't lay a finger on him. It's not like Cotchery had to break a tackle, but Hawkins is in position. He's got to make that tackle. That's a blown tackle.
And he didn't do it.
So that happens from time to time. But, Rook, I still go back to scoreboard. I mean, no one is scoring on this Patriots team. So even with the, you know, all the little holes we can point to in the Patriots game, sometimes the pass rush isn't there. Sometimes there's not a lot of dynamic plays going back the other way. You know, they don't have the big thumper in the secondary anymore with Harrison going. There's all these things we can point to. They're still holding teams off the scoreboard. That's the bottom line. And that's, I do think this defense is championship caliber. I don't think the offense is. And I think eventually that's going to come back to haunt them. And they're going to lose a game on offense.
Matt in Cambridge, England, across the pond. I can see this game ending up either as a comfortable low-scoring win for the Chargers or a close, high-scoring game. In order to have a shot, the Pats must score quickly and take an early lead. I happen to agree with that assessment. Rivers must be forced to throw the football, as if you let the Chargers go ahead, LT is going to run you into the ground, and Merriman and company will cause Brady all kind of problems. A key matchup, in my opinion, will be Daniel Graham against Merriman, or whichever tackle Merriman lines up on. We'll need the help of Graham with his blocking ability combined with the tackle. They have an opportunity to neutralize Merriman. I also think that happens to be one of the big keys, certainly, for the Patriots' offense, is to try to find a way to neutralize him. And based on where Merriman normally lines up, I would anticipate him matching up with Matt Lightside.
Well, you know, I think that this whole cat-and-mouse game is going to be interesting because there's no way they can expect Light to take care of Merriman on his own. He can't do it. So you put in Graham, you leave a tight end in, you leave a running back in. Kayser, let's face it, with Sean Phillips, needs the same help on the other side, Brooks. So, you know, if the Pats have any designs of going spread, which is really Tom Brady's best formation, they can't really do it and expect to block those guys. So the ball's either got to be out lickety-split, or they got to keep those tight ends, which means you're looking at running formations, and maybe this is the game where it's just power football and they run straight at the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers, one of the interesting stats that I looked at this week is that the Chargers rank 20th in the NFL in yards per rushing attempt allowed. Now, that's not rushing defense. They're 7th in rushing defense. And everyone looks at it and goes, oh, 7th in rushing defense. They're strong against the run. Well, that's yards per game. And Belichick always says to us, you know, that's not the one. The one you want to look at is yards per attempt.
Right.
Because that tells you really what people are gaining on the ground, and they're 20th. They're allowing over 4 yards a carry, and that tells me that some teams have been able to run the football at them.
By the way, Matt also says Pats win 34-31 in OT. Jason in Manitoba. Love the show. Understand that the Chargers are a great team. I also understand why someone might favor them, but I have two huge problems with what was said by our friend in San Diego. What is he smoking to compare Phillip Rivers to Tom Brady? Okay, he had a good regular season. So what?
Phillip Rivers, before you go on,
sure,
could be better than Brady. Sorry to do that on Patriots.com, but
at some point, you can make that argument when he wins 3 rings.
Right. Oh, I'm not saying now, but if Phillip Rivers was Tom Brady here in 2001,
then he might be where Tom Brady is now. I was sure.
I'll tell you, he's got 3 rings too.
Sure. Brady.
I like Phillip Rivers better than Peyton Manning.
Do you really?
Oh, I think he's
based on
makeup. Makeup. You go back and you look at Phillip Rivers. Again, I gotta look this up because I keep repeating it. But from what I understand, I think, don't hold me to it.
Okay.
That, He went 4-0 in bowl games as a collegiate.
True.
And was an MVP in all 4 bowl games.
That may be right.
Okay, now you've got to go look at who they were playing. It's obviously a different level than Peyton Manning.
Right.
But if you look at Phillip Rivers' high school and collegiate history compared to Manning, who's never won a championship of any kind.
That's true.
Phillip Rivers has been.
So you can take then the ability similar to a Manning and add the fact to it that he's actually a winner.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I mean by makeup. That's why I think this kid's going to be huge. He has makeup. Manning doesn't really have that makeup for whatever reason, and that's why I think Rivers is going to be huge. That's why I think he would have been great in this system. He would have taken coaching and been a leader and just, you know, I mean, this is not to disparage Tom Brady, but, you know, Phillip Rivers has a lot of the same qualities Tom does intangibly,
right,
and physically is a little bit bigger with better arm strength.
Glenn writes, do you and others in the media underestimate the Patriots D? If I am correct, they had the best statistical year in their history and the second fewest points allowed. Are we giving them short shrift because of LT and Gates? Why isn't the media and the San Diego Chargers questioning how they're going to stop our front seven? It almost sounds like we shouldn't show up when people talk about players needing guns to stop the Charger players. Honestly, what I would like to see is James Sanders play with the same emotion he did after he got stiff-armed in Tennessee. That was Harrison emotion that I think the other players feed off of. I think Michael gives the Patriots D some credit here.
Oh, totally.
Definitely. I just don't. That's all. I don't mean to disparage the Patriots' defense. I just happen to think that based on what I've seen in terms of the ability for the opposing teams to make big plays, I think that this is the one team that you don't want to make a big play against you. And until I see otherwise, I have to think that a guy like LT, I got to give him the benefit of the doubt. He is the MVP in the league.
Good player.
Yeah.
I just think if the Pats devote themselves to stopping a running game, they will stop it.
This one comes from Jay in Tampa, formerly from South Boston. I have the real keys to victory for the Patriots this Sunday. First, we find LaDainian Tomlinson in the parking lot. Pull a Tonya Harding on him. Crowbar his leg. Second, call the DOC. Find the Chargers defensive lineman's probation officers and tell them they're beating wives or the night before the game. Third, then we find Sean Merriman's juice dealer and spike his cycle with downers. This guy's unbelievable. Four, we call Marty Schottenheimer. Tell him how much we like Lorenzo Neal and Michael Turner. Five, we have someone step on Phillip Rivers' busted foot. Six, we just let Nate Keating choke again in the final drive. Okay.
If you're relying
like he's covered it all.
Yeah, the kid has missed three field goals all year.
Hey, he's pretty solid. I think that's why he's a Pro Bowl kicker, because he's pretty solid. Makia, John, I'm out of the loop today, but I've heard Merriman has said something to the effect of busting Brady's grill. Can you elaborate?
Have you heard that?
No, I have not heard that. We may have to do a search on that one.
We're making that up.
He said, I guess the roids have really gotten to him, as no one in San Diego told him not to fuel the fire. Now, he's already done that this week. Amir in Boxborough. Well, let's see. Let's start with the edges. I think the Bolts obviously have a great run game, good line, respectable defense, and a superstar in two of their mediocre areas. They have a great receiving tight end in the midst of a lunch pail set of wide receivers. They have a great rush LB in the midst of what I would consider a fair but average set of linebackers. The Pats have, on potential, Maroney, Dillon, Falk, to potentially have a better running game. They have a big, albeit slow, O-line. They have scattered talent all over the D. Pretty good defense. But none of these things are why the Pats can win the game. The reason the Pats can win the game is because of their versatility. They could be a spread offense with 11 different receivers. They could be a beefcake offense with Dillon and Maroney pounding. They can look like Philly and pass to Falk. They can turn into a crushing defensive team and bail out the offense. How can the Pats lose? Don't get first downs. If the Pats don't move the ball, the Bolts will just chew up the clock with their power game and wear out the D. Why the Pats must win? My current contract is up, and I'm planning on laying around and watching the playoffs. Don't let me down, boys. All right. You know, some interesting thoughts about how the Patriots' offense is certainly versatile. No doubt about that. There are different ways that they can go about doing things.
Absolutely. How do you defeat a big blitzing team? Do you spread them out and get it out of the, you know, get out of Tom Brady's hands quickly? Let him get in the shotgun, recognize where it's coming from, and unload it quickly? Or do you power up and run down their throats? The Pats, it's the beauty of them. They can do both.
You're right, and that will cause the Chargers, of course, to have to make a decision. Alex in Somerville says, very simply, Patriots 48, Chargers 17. How? Because F them, that's why.
Oh, that's good Patriots.com objectivity right there.
Wait, here we go.
Go F yourself, San Diego.
There we go. All right. In the best Ron Burgundy fashion here. All right, let's one final email. Let's squeeze one more in here. Guys, avid listener, love the show, apprehensive about stopping Tomlinson. He's like the Chargers logo. He's a lightning bolt, but we have an awesome defense, and Banta Kane is stepping up and making up for Sale's absence. I agree with the problem being on the offense. The turnovers earlier in the season was a pill, but I wish Maroney would run a little further and run around instead of into the pile. Caldwell has stepped up with his catches, but he still needs great improvement, as does Watson. However, the way Brady was changing up who he threw to against the Jets was absolutely awesome, and as long as he keeps that up, the Chargers won't know what hit him. I'm going to the game.
The Chargers won't know what hit him.
That's right. Wearing my jersey proud. Going to the game. How'd you get tickets? Oh, he's in California, that's why. Though I'm a California native. Go Pats, score. Pats 27, Chargers 17. Did you like that story, by the way, that Ticketmaster was refusing ticket sales to anybody outside of Southern Cal?
But I don't get why. Is there still tickets available?
Well, there's not anymore now. They're gone now. But at the beginning of the week, there were tickets available, which is extraordinary because we never see that.
Right. So that's just, you know, pathetic to begin with.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with that. Gary, what are we doing? We break in here, and then are we going to go get to Mr. Belichick?
Or to touchdown.
Okay, there we go. We'll go right to Bill Belichick. Michael, thank you, sir.
Okay, John.
Appreciate your stopping by. Gang, thank you for your participation this week. We're going to wrap up today's program with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium. And as we mentioned, should the Patriots win this weekend, then we will be back after Patriots Monday. We'll be back next Tuesday to preview the AFC Championship game. So we'll think positively. Think positive.